Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Just because you're right doesn't mean it's not dumb. Let's put that on the credit, shall we? Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
Oh, I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart.
Like it's a surprise.
Oh, I didn't see you there. Oh, it's man. The new year. It oh, is the God. New year. We are finally back with new episodes, although... It sounds like you guys really enjoyed the some of the reef spins, so thank you. And
reef
I'm
spins?
Pretty sure like
is that what we're calling?
Somebody on our team invented the term reef spin because
right. I was just going to say I was wondering where that
or
came
at least
from.
In podcast land, it's probably music related. Don't email me anyway. It is the new year.
Yes,
we have brand new episodes. So many new ways to get smarter together
because that's what we do. None of us is as smart as all of us, as you know. Make Me Smart is all about tech, the economy, culture as well. And it's all because of and for and with, honestly, y'all, says the kid who went to school in Georgia.
I often wonder about that. Okay, Georgia.
Can't stand grits. Don't like grits.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even understand. Do you like polenta?
Gross. It's like snot. Yes, I do like polenta. I understand there's a logical inconsistency there. Don't at me, bro.
I like how we've opened our really collaborative podcast, by the way, with each of us at some point just begging you. Because email us about the important things. Dude, yeah, you know anyway, what? It's too late. The emails are coming in already about the polenta versus grit situation.
I know.
Last year, I happened to make polenta last night, which is why I was thinking of it, but I accidentally bought, like, because Instacart, one of those, the rolls where you just slice it up and fry it.
Yeah.
And was... Yeah. Delicious.
Yeah, it's tasty, but it's not the genuine article, as you know. But
But it was way faster. Okay, shall we do the show?
Let's.
You can start. See we're a little rusty.
Yeah.
so we got to like have a nice long runway. Last year, you may recall, we and the rest of the world spoke at length about
long
Facebook
length.
And some of its issues with the fake news and the. You know, misleading ads and the groups and the bullying and the whatnot. And lo and behold, that combined with, I would argue, the increasing boringness of the content on Facebook turned off a lot of people from the app, including us, me and Kai. And however, this is the part where we say we gave it up, but we couldn't give it up completely.
Yeah, kind of not really, yeah.
Because nobody, and we're not alone in this, like lots of people could find themselves walking away from Facebook, but nobody could let go of Instagram.
So I guess we'll get to that part of it. But here's the thing. Molly and I are, I'm off Facebook in all but name, right? I've done everything but cancel my account. And the only reason I haven't is, frankly, because I think I'm expected to be there on behalf of my professional occupation. And I don't know about you. But the secret, the dirty little secret is that, you know, I'm flipping through Instagram a couple of times a day, cause it's kind of fun. The catch, of course, is that Instagram is part of Facebook, but sort of, it kind of doesn't, it feels a little bit different for a whole lot of reasons that we're going to get into, with this conversation we're having today.
Yeah. And I think it is a dilemma shared by many because Instagram does feel fun. It doesn't ask as many personal questions. Like in order to sign up for it, you don't have to, you know, do that whole crazy quiz about where you went to school and what your relationship status is. But it's not clear how much data Instagram sucks up versus Facebook or how much they talk to each other. And I think a lot of us are asking this question because it is the one thing we don't want to give up. So lots and lots of listeners have said the same thing. We basically said on the show, like, yeah, I could easily walk away from Facebook, but I don't want to give up Instagram. And this was echoed along with all the questions about whether that's okay by Jordan Namu in Santa Barbara, California. She left us this voice memo about her dilemma.
My husband and I regularly listen to the podcast together, and we appreciate that you guys encourage us to have challenging conversations. It was through one of these challenging conversations that we decided to delete Facebook this year. However, I can't quite work up the courage to delete Instagram just yet, and I can't come up with a good reason not to. Is my data actually any safer on Instagram? Please say yes.
Oh, how we wish we could.
Yep.
So to break it all down, we called someone who's quickly becoming one of my favorite reads on the internet, Taylor Lorenz. She writes about internet culture for The Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And man, does she have her finger on the pulse. Like, great. She's just fantastic. And we asked her for her thoughts on, I think, what we can all safely refer to as the dilemma.
Look, I'm not a super data expert, but it's kind of the same thing. I mean, maybe you don't have event invites or Facebook groups on Instagram, but there's a lot of other different ways that people engage on Instagram, you know, that are giving just as much data. For instance, people are, you know, location tagging is very prominent on Instagram. Yeah. I mean, I think you're kidding yourself if you think it's not all sucking your data.
Right. And the capacity of humans to deceive themselves is well documented. But what are the differences between Facebook and Instagram in how users and how people use them?
First of all, Instagram is so tied to our social networks and our it's sort of like where our online manifestation of our offline identity lives. I mean, that's the purpose that Facebook initially served, but it's sort of morphed over to Instagram. So, you know, it's like, where are you going to go to post your wedding hashtag? Where are you going to go to post about your new photo, announce a relationship? Like, all of that is tied to Instagram. People use Instagram so much more in their daily life now than Facebook, so it's much easier for a lot of people. So it can seem harder to quit.
It's super interesting because it sounds like what you're describing is sort of what the newsfeed used to be, because it's personal. It's like the newsfeed used to be just this interesting, you know, what we thought was interesting, the trivialities of our daily lives. And then it got filled up with ads and it got filled up with news and arguments about politics. And I think it feels like what you're saying is like content is still king and the good content now is on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the more personal content is on Instagram. So exactly mm-hmm. what made Facebook so sticky to begin with, which is that you could go on there, see all of what your close friends were up to, hear about these life announcements, all the things that made Facebook like kind of so addicting back in early days, you know, are now what makes Instagram so addicting currently, which is being able to actually keep up with your friends and keep up with your interests. You know, Facebook did have Facebook pages, obviously, that you could follow. But like you said, everything got really quickly spammed with links and ads and news that was maybe, I don't know, stressful. So Instagram can be sort of more of an escape. And Instagram, unlike Facebook, allows for discovery and forming of new social connections. So it's also a place where people go to, you know, discover new stuff that they like, discover new content, discover new brands, discover new people, and make new social connections. So it's a much harder network to quit.
But you got to point out here that ads are popping up now all the time on Instagram. I mean, it's like every two or three posts, you're scrolling along. And you're like, oh, God, there's an ad. Oh, God, there's another ad. And then forget about ads and stories, man. Those are like nightmares.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that ads are what is going to do Instagram in. I mean, obviously, Instagram thinks critically about ad load. But I think what made Facebook so irrelevant was its loss of like purpose for so many people. So even though Instagram is getting filled with ads, it still serves this vital purpose, which is allowing users to connect with friends and generate new social connections. Facebook doesn't do that to the same extent, I would say, for a lot of especially younger users.
It's so interesting. You just called Facebook irrelevant.
I mean, Facebook is irrelevant.
Wow.
Sorry.
That's so funny. Because, wow.
I mean, it is. It's not, it just doesn't, I mean, I would say it's culturally irrelevant. And I'm speaking, by the way, particularly about America. I mean, it obviously serves a huge purpose for so many other people around the world where it is very culturally relevant. But yeah, I mean, it isn't like the number one place where your identity lives online anymore.
So I feel like we cannot underestimate, though, the evolution, right? The Facebookification of Instagram. I talked to at CES, actually, Mark mm-hmm. Rabkin, who's mm-hmm. the VP of Ads and Business Platform for Facebook. It is very clear that Instagram stories is where all the juice is in terms of new advertising opportunities, and that's going to get a lot more intense. And we've seen these sort of tests and changes with Instagram where it looks like they're going to actually have product pages for people who operate essentially businesses on Instagram. So it'll be like way easier to shop there. And you just have to wonder, how long is it going to be before that sort of purity of the content is diluted in same way.
I wouldn't say that that's necessarily bad. I mean, a lot of the shopping products that Instagram has rolled out, it's good for users. I mean, users want to be able to shop. I mean, I personally have bought a lot of stuff off Instagram. I think a lot of young people have too. But, mm-hmm. Instagram provides a really nice, easy way to scroll through and, you know, look visually at different products. And so to be able to shop within your feed, it could be a good user experience. I mean, I don't think that all ads are necessarily a bad thing if it's serving users. I think when it becomes a problem, like we mentioned before, is when the ad load is too high and people are getting annoyed with too many spammy interstitials, you know, maybe between their friends' stories. Instagram will have to be very careful about kind of like walking that dance. But some of the shopping products, I actually think could end up just making it an even more engaging experience. I mean, imagine if it made it easier to online shop through Instagram. That would be huge. And I think that a lot of users would just end up spending more time on the app and consider it even more useful.
You have me at a disadvantage because I don't know the answer to the question I'm about to ask you. But wasn't that sort of the pitch from Facebook too? Hey, look, you can shop on Facebook and everything would be great.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, unfortunately, Facebook, the platform wasn't necessarily built for that. I think with so many social platforms, and Twitter's a good example of this, right? But like they build out new products based on like different user behavior. So if they see people trying to shop on Instagram or people hacking the system kind of to try to get their products out and users engaging with it, you know, that can be a sort of powerful signal that a product like this built in-house might be useful. I mean, one thing you could look at is just the rise of influencer culture and how many influencers are like selling stuff on Instagram, and they're not able to do any of that through the platform, and that's all revenue that Instagram's theoretically missing out on. So I think Instagram will have to be careful about that stuff, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't work hard on, you know, taking advantage of the monetization opportunities that are out there.
What's your guess on how quickly they screw it up, honestly?
I have a lot more faith in Instagram than I do Facebook. I mean, that said, Adam Mosseri just took over as CEO.
Molly, you go with that one, right? Because the founders said, we're out of here.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, but Adam is a really smart executive. But yeah, I never underestimate tech founders' ability to like screw themselves over.
Too true. And then what do you think about, I mean, one other just fascinating thing about Instagram is this emergence of it as like a way to make money, whether it's meme accounts, which it's now cracking down on, or like you said, the influencers who are trying to figure out how to kind of sell more directly, or even all these direct-to-consumer brands like that are constantly advertised to me, right? Mm-hmm. Beta Brand and Citizenry and any number of other ones. Mm-hmm. That feels like something they should really get on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the issue for a lot of social platforms is sort of like how to deal with these, I would say, just, I guess, broadly classified as influencers, but people with large audiences that are using their platforms to monetize. YouTube has done a pretty good job of working with these people in the sense that they allow them to sell pre-roll, mid-roll ads that they can get a cut of. They have a preferred creators program that allows these advertisers to find the top people to work with. Instagram hasn't done any of that, and Facebook hadn't really either, previously, not as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can develop more products for influencers going forward. It's definitely an area of opportunity. I think it just depends on, you know, how they prioritize and want to work with these people.
There's been a whole lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth from the user base, I suppose, about getting rid of a lot of these meme accounts, which Molly was talking about that they did over Christmas and shutting folks out. Any sympathy there for those folks?
I mean, they do this every year. I wrote about the big Instagram rapture of 2014 where they did another similar purge of millions of accounts. Instagram always will make an effort to clean up on spam and, you know, deactivate accounts that violate its terms of service. A lot of people who scale their accounts do it through somewhat dodgy means. They eventually might suffer the consequences of that. I feel bad that Instagram doesn't have a better creator relations team that can deal with a lot of these people. I mean, I think that's the sticking point for all these platforms is when you do punish these people, even if it's justified, you do need to give a little bit more information because even just their followers will get upset. You know, like people who love to follow a certain page, if they see Instagram deactivating it without any explanation, they can feel frustrated with the platform. That said, Instagram does do a pretty good job of keeping spam to a minimum on the platform, and so shutting types of accounts is something they're always gonna need to do.
So I think she's right, right? Spam is kept to a minimum. But I got to tell you, and I was thinking about that as this interview was rolling, and I was thinking about why I was so and am so irritated with Instagram ads. And here's what I've come up with. They take up the same amount of space as you're scrolling as does a post from somebody you actually want to follow, right? And so, you know, every four posts, there's one that's useless to you. And you're like, but why can't we just make this smaller and zip on by like happens on other, you know, digital platforms in a lot of cases? That's my gripe.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, I think that is a reasonable gripe. I also find that I see the exact same ads over and over. And I don't know if that is, like if I see that Peloton ad one more time, I'm going to buy one though is the thing. Like if I see that ad one more time, I'm going to buy one.
But then you're going to keep getting more ads for it. That's the thing.
No, I know. The targeting, like the Instagram targeting is scary good.
Yep.
I will say that. So for those of you who think it's not taking that much data about you, you're wrong.
Well, that's exactly it, right? I think it's a huge mistake to try to delude yourself that, it's Instagram, not Facebook, and it's okay. Not.
It is. Yeah. But I have to say, I have arrived at a new worldview for 2019, which is that I would like to have it all.
Okay, then.
I know.
And that's Make Me Smart for this Tuesday. Thanks for coming by.
But, okay, I am rarely on Facebook. But when I do visit Facebook, and there's this part where it's like I creep over to Facebook, I open it in my browser, and I feel like it's like a dirty little action, like I need to put it in incognito.
Oh, man.
I'm like, here's this nice post from a friend of mine that I haven't been in touch with for a long time. Oh, here's what my family's doing. Oh, here's a bunch of cute baby pictures. I want to have Facebook in my life, and I want Facebook to respect the use of my data. Put appropriate boundaries on who else can have that data and communicate with me clearly about what I am consenting to and what I'm not. And frankly, those two things should not be mutually exclusive.
But they are, because Facebook has demonstrated no capacity or, to be honest, interest in holding up its end of that bargain. For all the backing and forthing that has gone on with Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg and you know, everybody, they're not putting up or shutting up. They're just saying, oh, yeah, okay, we'll be better. And they're not.
I agree. But so instead of walking away from Facebook, I would like us all to ask our, I don't know, elected representatives, the FTC, the bodies in charge of this. But seriously, there's we're going to put this on the website. There's a great op-ed by Anand Giridharadas.
You got it.
Who's fantastic and who talks about when we cast this. Like deleting Facebook, he says, is not enough. And he said, when we tell people to get off the platform, we recast a political issue as a willpower issue. And every time we have a conversation about whether we should walk away from Facebook, then we're not talking about regulation.
Okay. So look, I hear you, and we have had this conversation before, and I wish I knew you were going to bring this up, because then I would have had queued up the piece of tape from Senator Orrin Hatch last time Mark Zuckerberg was on Capitol Hill, in which Senator Orrin Hatch, an elected representative, and at the time, the third in line to succession in the presidency. Wait a minute. Vice president. Yes. Third in line to succession in the presidency as the president pro tem. He said to Mark Zuckerberg, so how do you make money on this then, son? And Zuckerberg said, barely keeping a straight face, we sell ads, Senator. Our elected representatives have no grasp, zero, of what is going on in the digital environment, right? And so for us as consumers to rely on them, I think it's almost as bad as trusting Facebook to do what it's supposed to do with your data.
I love, by the way, how you said you were like not prepared for that, and yet you just, you know, went ahead with the third in line for succession and everything. Never not prepared, Kai Rizdahl. That's the guy. I would argue that was actually a watershed moment. Weirdly, embarrassing as it seemed, because that was the moment that everybody became unavoidably aware of the business model. And it's going to take time. It really is going to take time. But I do think like the idea that it's on me to delete my Facebook or feel like a dirty bird for using Facebook that's not quite the right answer. Like we have to ask for more.
Amen. Yes.
So that's my.
All right.
That's my plan.
Fair enough. Weigh in on this one, would you?
Yeah. What do you think?
Make me smart at marketplace.org. Hit Molly and me. Molly and I, Molly and me, I don't know. Somebody correct me on that. Up on Twitter. She's at Molly Wood. I'm at Kai Rizdolf. Getting smart does not stop right here, you know. I'm not going to say the word so your devices that you keep on your kitchen counter or your bedroom, you know, your dresser or whatever doesn't flip. But we've got an Amazon Echo skill. All you have to do is say the name of that gizmo and then say, make me smart. And then you'll hear little explainers of the day from me and Molly.
Yep. And there are brand new topics all the time. Right now we are explaining my favorite topic ever, Inbox Infinity, which I think was written by Taylor Lorenz.
That's
P.S.
Right. That's right.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And I'm all for this.
Which I'm an adherent of. Yes, I'm a disciple thereof.
Seriously. Yeah. I don't understand those people who get all mad about all my unread emails because my inbox is like Google. When I need information, I search my inbox and it's there.
Right.
Why would I get rid of that stuff?
Exactly.
Trademarks, blue chips. Again, if you have an Amazon Echo, just say, you know what, and then make me smart, and then you're in. You know what? I'm going to email someone.
There you go.
Have it all in 2019.
That's right. That's right.
All right.
All right, we got to go.
Time for a break.
Yep. God, I thought it was that one. I thought it was before it was. I missed it by a couple of beats. All right, welcome back.
That's been so many weeks.
We're gonna do our fixations here, the things that are on our minds. All right, who's going first?
I mean, I like put links in and took them out. I tried to stick to
really?
Only two.
Oh my God.
So many. Right. I'm obsessed with the shutdown. I don't even know where to start. Maybe you could just focus us.
Well, so I'm obsessed with the shutdown too, both professionally and in a personal and American citizenry sense of embarrassment away. I mean, it's I'm completely embarrassed and I'm so glad I'm not traveling overseas anytime soon because, oh my God, how do you look anybody in the straight face and say, yes, I'm an American, the greatest democracy the world has ever known. Oh, wait, hold on. Right? Come on.
Yeah.
That's
I'm so glad I'm not traveling at all, by the way, because
All
of the stuff about the exhausted air traffic controllers who aren't getting paid and the TSA stuff. Like, I have a friend who's in New York right now, and she's like, I don't know if I'm going to get home. They're going to go on strike any second now.
Yep. And honestly, you can't blame
absurd.
Them.
What do you think? I feel like we should do a show, though. My son, in his history class, they did a, you know, they had a little, like, he goes, I think that this is all, they have to write a little essay and come up with a thesis and then ask the parent what the parent thinks. And he said, my thesis is that, you know, sixth grade, man, it's a lot of work. My thesis is that President Trump is to blame for all of this. And I was like, well, actually, it's more like there was this China shop and all the vases were already cracked. And then they let a bull loose in it. Because like our budgeting process has been broken for how long? How many decades? Like how, you know, it feels like, haven't we had a shutdown every year for the last 10? Like just...
Right.
And I feel like there's some, maybe we get Kimberly Adams in here to tell us about that, because I feel like there's some explaining to do about how really what happened is the worst case scenario came to pass in a system that was already like where everybody was predicting that someday this was going to happen.
Well, yeah, except for this. If you had a rational actor in the White House, right? And, and I say that intentionally because many of the things the president does are, economically speaking, not rational moves. If you had a rational actor, this stuff wouldn't happen because that person would see and understand and want to mitigate the damage that is being caused by political dysfunction. But there's no motivation to do that. And at this point, the Democrats are like, bleep me, bleep you, you know?
Well, exactly.
I can cuss on a podcast, but then producers get upset, so I can't do that.
I feel like I would die of excitement if you dropped an F-bomb right now. That would be like a really big...
You remember that whole go rope we went through last time when I said something that short of the F-bomb?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So we're not doing that again. Anyway, so that's the shutdown. That's my take, right? And I think your example is exactly right, that it's a China shop where the vases were broken and then a bull just got in and went bananas.
Okay. I want to end on one last thing about the shutdown, which is what are we going to do about the food? Like, do we need to all go to farmers markets now?
Well, so hold on.
I'm
right?
pretty freaked out about the food safety thing.
Don't be. Because the reality is that most facilities that are not being inspected now on a regular basis really only get inspected once every 5 years. So it's not like inspectors are in there every single day checking every facility. They're not. And that's not what's not being done, if that makes any sense at all, right?
Okay.
They're on a schedule, they're on a rotation, and it's not like things are not happening every day, if that makes any sense at all.
in fact, those what you're saying is like what we have now learned. Oh, there's a piece in Quartz that essentially says this too. What we've now learned is like, oh, it's really not getting that checked that much
anyway.
Right.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay. Yes. So farmers markets forever, not just during the shutdown.
Yes.
Great. Super. Time to hear from you guys.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
Favorite thing in the whole show, every time. We asked some of you if you've ever thought, I know, we asked some of you if you ever thought about leaving Facebook, only to stay on Instagram, like certain members of this conversation. Sean Lewoon. Lewoon. He's Welsh. It's L-L-E-W-L-L-Y-N. So you pronounce that on a cold read. I dare you. Anyway, he's from Columbia, Maryland. However, his name is pronounced, and Sean, I apologize. He responded to that question with this voice memo. Here you go.
To me, Facebook feels much noisier. Facebook constantly wants my input on things like my favorite movies, favorite music, and it feels like I'm building a marketing profile for Facebook.
You are.
Instagram, however, feels much more streamlined. Ads feel obvious, and they're easy to swipe past.
But here,
my profile contains just some basic information, and while I understand it's a false pretense, I feel a lot less exposed using Instagram.
Dude.
Right now, I'm pretty much only on Facebook, just for the local groups and some family members who I communicate with, but I've removed the app from my phone, and I'm kind of thinking about leaving.
There you go. There you go. Amen, brother. That's all I'm saying.
2019, the Mystery Science Theater
that was an annotated voicemail. Sean, I apologize, man, but I couldn't help it.
He did it genius style, and I love it. Do it again. It's amazing.
No, I won't. That was
rude. I'm not going to lie. Like I said, the targeting is so good on Instagram I look at all the ads and I swipe through all of them. They're really good.
So look, here's the thing. I think actually that I could live without Instagram. And here's how we know that, right? So when I went on vacation in November and I said I wasn't going to be on Twitter, I actually wasn't. But I was on Instagram a whole bunch. But if you look at my Instagram profile, that was, I think... Like, those are the only posts that I've made on a consistent basis ever. Usually it's just random sporadic crap. And I think I could go without it. And maybe I'll try a week. Maybe I'll try a week. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try a week without Instagram.
I like this.
And I will report back next week, next episode.
Okay. I have a prediction.
Okay.
You're going to get in a big Twitter fight. Like, you're going to find yourself because you're going to spend so much time on Twitter. it's like the principle of constant mass in the universe, right? Like, that time's going to have to be spent somewhere, and you're going to get in a Twitter fight.
That could totally be. I will think about what I'm about to say next. I will think about it and perhaps report back on the actual usage pattern of Instagram next week. But it might be a little TMI, so... Anyway, moving on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Allison Jenkins from Boston spends most of her time on Instagram instead of Facebook, and here is why.
To me, Instagram is a much cleaner experience. Since the platform makes it difficult to share someone else's posts, my feed isn't littered with controversial articles or viral memes. Instead, I'm easily able to view pictures of my friends' children or what they were up to on Saturday night. And that's all I really wanted from social media anyway.
So that's a really good point, and it's foundational to the Instagram experience, right? The not being able to share somebody else's post. And while from time to time it irritates me because I see something and I'm like, that's super cool, I want to share it, it does protect you from the randomness and virality and meanness, I think, of Twitter.
Wow, right? That is really, that is a really excellent point. And also the idea that content is king. All we ever really wanted from social media was this kind of trivial enjoyment, like just a little catch up, a little gossip sesh, and it all got ruined.
Well, so yes, Twitter's and Facebook to some degree as well, right? Their fundamental flaw is the shareability of it. But in the early days, before it got mean and sewer-like and cesspool-ish, it was interesting to see what other people were thinking. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, absolutely. Right, no, okay. That's what I'm saying. That's what I loved about it.
Yeah.
Like, that was just... In fact, I was just talking about with a friend the how great late night Twitter is, like super late night Twitter.
What? I'm like in bed by 10:30, man. Late night Twitter.
Well, on the rare occasions, especially, we benefit because we're on the
Pacific for sure. Time,
so
for sure.
We can get like New York late night Twitter at like midnight, which is awesome, which is pushing the limits. Let me just say, but it feels like that's when you have permission to have fun on Twitter.
Oh yeah, I see. I can see it. I can totally see that. Yeah.
it's also serious. Like, you feel like if you just goof off that either somebody's going to correct you immediately or yes. you're being insensitive to the larger world conversation and blah, you know, it's just like not.
And what a horrible person you are. Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah,
that.
And
totally
Instagram agree. Still allows you to have fun.
I'll buy that. I'll buy that.
We need.
All right. So during however long it was, 3 weeks, a month, whatever, while we were doing respins, we got a lot of other questions from y'all during that period. Scott Hedberg listened to our Design School remix, and he told us how design thinking is used in the Army. And here's what he says. Often at the operational and strategic levels, guidance from the command authority can be less than specific. Design allows planners to focus on what the actual goals are and then work to identify the true problems that need to be solved. All right, so I'm thinking about that. And let me put on my Navy veteran hat here. So we had a thing in the Navy which went like this. And it went, so when you were out operating, like out in the operational forces, right? And for me, that was flying off the boat and being off somewhere doing whatever the mission was. The thing you did was you sent this, well, it wasn't an email. It was a radio transmission usually that said, unless otherwise directed, and the abbreviation for that was UNODIR, UNODIR, right? Unless otherwise directed, I'm going to do XYZ. And that let you do what you wanted to do, and it gave the command authority the opportunity to reel you back in or to say nothing and let you go do what you were going to do. I think the peril here, and maybe this is Army versus Navy from Scott's experience, is that maybe what the command authority is trying to do is intentionally be vague so that operational forces can effectively do the same thing. So maybe it's not a difference at all. Now having talked myself into that circle. So there you go.
I like it. I like the processing in real time thing. And I love how the design episode never gets old.
I know.
It is time now for the Make Me Smart question. Another thing that never gets old. What is something you thought you knew that you later found out you were wrong about? Jonathan Gulst sent us this answer.
Hi, Molly and Kai. As they say on the talk radio front, long-time listener, first-time caller. I thought I knew that it was most important to be right. Throughout our school years, we are rewarded for knowing the right answer. It seemed like it was the only thing that mattered. But when I got to the workplace, I learned that being right didn't always matter. One person I know once said, "Do you want to be right or do you want to be effective?" Thus, I found out that sometimes you need to give up on the, quote, right answer to get things done. To bring this back to economics, this is really the theory of second best, of which I am a big believer in because the optimal conditions exist only in an economist's mind. Thanks for listening.
There you
cool.
go. Yep.
I have a friend who frequently reminds himself at work, would you rather be right or happy? And he often tells himself he would rather be right. Ooh, that's a level of self-knowledge that's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, so this will be another test, actually, of whether our mutual boss, the senior vice president and general manager of this production house, Deborah Clark, listens to the end of this podcast. Because if she does, she will hear that answer, and she will remark upon it to me and say, "Look in the mirror, yo." I'm just saying.
Ooh.
I'm just saying. That's all I got.
I'm nervous about the outcome of this.
Yeah. Anyway, make me smart what? Question once again. What is something you thought you knew but found out you were wrong about? Send us your answer. Make it a voicemail so we don't have to read it because that's always better. Make me smart at marketplace.org.
And that is it. We did it. We did it. We're back. It's all uphill from here, guys. Make Me Smart is produced yeoman's work by Shara Morris. Wrangle in. Senior producer is Eve Tro, who shout out made NPR Mageddon this week on Twitter. You need to look it up. It's amazing. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. This week's program was engineered by Jake Gorski. Our theme music was composed by the wonderful and talented Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
They're fun. They're talented. I don't know if they're wonderful, but they're
and wonderful.
Let's see if they
they're wonderful.
To the, end. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is the aforementioned Deborah Clark. There you go.
Hi, Deb.
Yeah, now we'll see, right? All right, here we go. Bye.
Peace out, peeps.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.